Hello and welcome to Gotta Classify 'Em All, a new podcast where childhood memories meet science. Each episode we talk about a Pokemon and the science that inspired it. In this episode we discuss the third Pokemon, Venusaur. I'm your host and 2000 Pokemon tournament winner, Camden Hanslick-Burton, and joining me is our Pokemon trainer in training, Margaret Hanslick-Burton.
Welcome to the show!
Before we start, you might be wondering, wait, where's episode two?
Where is it?
Yeah, I swear I saw episode one. Definitely saw it. But I must have missed episode two.
Nope, you didn't miss episode two. It is exclusively for our Patreon supporters.
You can support Gotta Classify 'Em All and our other podcasts, Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions, by supporting us on Patreon.
But how? Great question. By going to patreon.com/don'tpeeonyourleg. If you'd be so kind, and if you're able to, you can choose one of three support levels. The top two levels earn you access to bonus content.
What bonus content, you may wonder? Every other week, we create episodes of Gotta Classify 'Em All, with public episodes being published once a month. You'll get odd number episodes on the public feed on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. But to get the even number episodes, like episode two, you'll want to become a fan of the show to gain access to the bonus content that we have.
So again, you can join and support us and gain access to that bonus content at patreon.com/don'tpeeonyourleg. Now, on to the show.
Margaret, welcome back. Episode three, how you feeling?
I feel good.
Do you feel like you know more about Pokemon yet?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Pop quiz. Mm-hmm. What's this Pokemon called for this week?
Venusaur.
Very good. Do you want to take a shot at what that name derives from?
Well, it's an evolution of Bulbasaur. Is that right?
Yes. So, Bulbasaur was the first stage. And then last episode, we talked about Ivysaur, which is the second stage. And this is the third and final stage of their evolution, Venusaur.
So I'm wondering if they are kind of like a Venus flytrap plant animal hybrid of some kind.
So there's a hotly debated debate about that. So, Venu is this an interesting one, or Venusaur. Venusaur. Venusaur, we could be mean Venus, like a Venus flytrap.
Mm.
Which is also Latin for beauty.
Because they are gorgeous.
They are beautiful. Or it might mean venom.
Oh, Venusaur.
So if you hear me say Venusaur, Venusaur, it's partly because I kind of go back and forth between venom and Venus, which sort of sound different the way I say it.
Also, the third option, which I'm not seeing here listed or hearing you talk about, is that it's Venusaur, like perhaps this third iteration of Bulbasaur is like a wedding planner or some sort of gala coordinator. Is that something that you saw in your research?
It's not.
I'll do some digging.
Great. We'll get that in post. I did learn something interesting about venom.
Mm-hmm.
It's Latin for poison.
Huh.
Which is confusing. Can you explain why biologically that's confusing?
Well, as I think we've discussed previously, I know we've discussed it previously on Don't Pee on Your Leg, and I think even on the first episode of this bonus podcast, venom is something that is injected, whether through spines or fangs, and poison is something that's ingested. So, you know, you eat something that makes you sick, that's poison.
Yeah, so I just thought that was interesting that
it's a pretty pedantic.
It is pedantic, but it's funny to me that venom literally means poison in Latin.
Right.
Which is in sor, obviously the Latin suffix, which means lizard. Venusaur, Venusaur, Galasaur.
Yes.
Whatever you got
planosaur.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
Wedding Planosaur. Here we are, our right. third Pokemon and the last of this evolution before we get to some new Pokemon.
Okay.
In our next couple episodes. But Margaret, let's talk about Venusaur. And first, let's do the reveal and see what they look like. Do you have any guesses
well,
what you're going to see?
Like I said, I think that it's going to look a little bit like a Venus flytrap. I'm trying to imagine what the body will look like the animal part of it will look like. I assume that it will also be a sort of plant-animal hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to imagine it's kind of like a tortoise with a Venus flytrap on its back.
All right. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Let's take a look at him.
Oh, wow.
Talk to us.
Okay. So little Bulbasaur has really grown up here.
Bulbasaur's grown up.
He looks like, who's the teen boy dinosaur on Dinosaurs?
Robbie.
He looks like that episode when Robbie is on steroids.
Oh, and he gets acne?
Yeah.
And big?
Yeah, and he gets like spikes that stick out from his arms and they tear his like sleeves.
Dinosaur, great sore. Great TV show.
Great. Rest in peace.
Fran yeah.
Sinclair.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Jessica Walters, yeah.
Yeah. So has much more pointed ears, at least this image, really serious look. And then it kind of, the plant aspect is like a palm tree got turned upside down and the fronds of the palm tree are resting on his or her back. And then at the top where the bottom of this upside down palm tree would be is this pink sort of spotted flower with what looks like a crown in the middle.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you did a great job.
Thank you.
Describing them. So that's Venusaur. That's our final evolution.
Wow. Looking pretty serious.
Yeah, they're a serious bird. They're not a bird.
No.
But, you know, they don't mess around. So they are still a grass poison type.
Wait,
so
let me take notes on this. Hold on. I need to make okay. sure I write this
down.
Oh,
is this your Pokemon field journal?
My scientific observation.
Yeah,
as
a trainer in training, you should take diligent notes.
Grass type, which is what they've all been so far.
And
right?
a poison type, which they've all been so
and
far. So they do not break from that.
Great.
Here's where they get a little different. You already kind of noticed that he'd be big.
Oh, yeah. Very brawny, I would describe it.
So their height is 6'7" inches.
Wow. Oh, like on two, on the back feet, like standing up?
I think to the top of the flower.
Okay.
I don't think they measure by like being on their
how many hands
hind
high
legs.
Venusaur. Okay. 6'7". My goodness. Okay.
Don't scroll ahead.
I'm not. Okay.
Okay.
So I also want to call out that you made a point about this the last couple episodes, and I figure I should have clarified. When I say 6'7", that sounds odd. Like it sounds like a very like anal retentive, like people creating, like why such a specific number?
Mm-hmm.
So we do want to remember that because this was made in Japan, they use the metric system.
Okay.
So 6'7" is 2 meters.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
or,
I see.
Well,
I see.
They say 2 meters would be about 6 feet. So I don't exactly know. And remember our, the canon is Bulbapedia. And so they quote it as 2 meters or 6'7".
Okay.
I'm not exactly.
So it's a much rounder number in the metric system.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's much rounder when we talk metrics. So if you hear odd numbers, I'm giving it to our American audience. But that is why they are so
specific.
That they are that way. If you don't like it, stop using a wild system of measuring.
I know.
So let's get into the weight.
Okay.
So he's a beefy boy. He big, he tall.
Yep.
He 221 pounds.
Wow. All right.
Or 100 kilos.
Okay. Wow. 221 pounds though is for 6'7" feels like it would look a little bit more spindly than what I'm looking at right now. You know what I mean?
I guess that's...
That's not much weight to spread across six
That's foot, a good point.
7 inches.
I guess the flower might not weigh much and add a lot of
Even
height.
Even still... Again, I think I asked this on the first one. Do they have hollow bones? Is that what keeps them lightweight?
I don't really remember.
I just think it's a little on the light side for such a what looks like a bulky animal. All right, sorry, go ahead.
So they're very similarly strong and weak. The same as Ivysaur and Bulbasaur. Strong against flying, fire types, ice types, psychic types, weak against fighting, water, grass, and electric types.
Sorry, just to clarify, if you're saying if they're in a fight and there is another Pokemon with the... What were the last things you said? What were the
Sorry,
weaknesses?
I think I flipped it again because I flipped it the last episode. Sure. Go but ahead. They're strong against... Or let me say, they're... You want strength or weaknesses first?
Well, what do they do well against?
Yeah, okay. So they are mostly resistant to, like, fighting type doesn't do well against them.
Okay.
Water type doesn't do well. Other grass type, electric type, and fairy type. Those don't do well against
fairy?
Them.
Fairy?
Sorry, fairy is not generation one. We'll ignore that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and then they don't do well against what?
They don't do well against flying type, fire, psychic, and ice.
Again with the psychic. Okay.
Yep. And which makes sense. Plants don't do well against fire. I don't really understand the ice one. I guess
well, they
plants
don't
do well
against
ice
either. Yeah.
And plants.
Not most.
Yeah. So that's odd. Yeah. And I guess they do well against water because they like water. I don't really understand
or they
the
are
electricity
they
thing. Like,
oh, no, they are a grass type. Sure.
I guess you're not conduct the electricity if you're
I think we may be reading too much sure. into it. I don't know if
I mean this whole podcast is about reading into the biology of these things.
It's a good point
that I don't know if they intended us to do.
Sure.
So that's a bit of the fighting. It is the final evolution, so we expect it to be pretty strong. Let me read to you from the Pokédex.
Great.
Venusaur.
Yep.
The plant blooms when it is absorbing solar energy.
Okay.
It stays on the move to seek sunlight.
The whole animal stays on the move to seek sunlight.
It stays on the move to seek sunlight.
Okay.
So the whole thing, I guess, because okay. I think when it says it, I don't think it just means
the flower can sort of migrate off and
kind of like seeing a turtle without a shell. I don't know if we want to see a Venusaur without the flower.
Certainly not.
It has the same power-ups as Bulbasaur, or the same fighting moves as Bulbasaur. So those classic ones, go ahead and name the ones I named before.
Okay, let's see. Strengths were, right? Is that what you're asking?
The fighting moves.
Oh, the fighting moves. That's right. Where there was like a powder, poison powder.
Very good. Very good.
There was threatening notes, I think, was one move. Sort of threatening.
Growl?
That's what I meant.
Okay.
Growling. Oh, yeah. Growling a tackle, I think.
Tackle. Very
tackle,
good.
Tackle, because those are pretty generic.
Uh-huh.
That's what's coming to mind.
Sleep powder was another. Okay. Razor leaf. Solar beam.
Solar beam, I think, is new.
No? Solar beam is the final thing it gets it at level 65.
Mm-hmm.
So most likely something for you to know, Margaret, is that you don't in Pokemon don't have to evolve your Pokemon. They can keep leveling up, but there's a point where they reach a certain level and you can level them up to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make the choice of whether you want them to evolve or not. So it is possible Bulbasaur could have a solar beam.
Oh, I see. Without becoming Venusaur.
But generally, Venusaur would have
solar beam.
That's if you see a Venusaur, it is like, for example, probably definitely going to have poison powder. Whereas if you see a Bulbasaur, it might not have poison powder.
If I see a Venusaur, I assume that these are my last moments on this earth because this
depends.
Tall, skinny, beflowered dinosaur is near me, so I'm just gonna, run the other direction if possible.
Sure. They are obviously hollow bones, so you could knock them over potentially.
I'd rather just kind of
book it.
Yeah.
They're very light though.
They are light. Are they fast? Is that one of their things?
Let's see. I'm gonna control F.
Fast. Speed.
Speed.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. We're going off script, going live on.
Sorry. Going live.
Speed is at 80.
80 what?
Out of some bigger number.
100. Okay. Oh boy. So they are fast. Can you explain what solar beam means? What does that do?
Yeah, I can do solar beam for you.
Okay. While you're doing that, I want to point out that one of my favorite things about Venusaur is that the way that this palm frond is sitting on their head looks like a little haircut. And I do like that. Do you see what I'm seeing?
Oh, yep.
Looks like a little haircut.
Yep, it does. So it does sit over there, and I've got some more information about that.
Okay.
So solar beam isn't an attack, so to speak. Let me clarify.
Okay.
It's not an attack right away.
Okay.
You take one turn to take in a lot of sunlight,
mm-hmm.
and then on the next turn, the solar beam is discharged.
From Venusaur.
From Venusaur. And then that can hurt the other Pokemon.
Just
that you're
aiming the sunbeam.
I think you're aiming the energy you've absorbed.
Okay.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, I think I have all the information I need to know.
Great. Can I leave you with a couple of facts before we go into our research?
You may.
So this is fun. I know I said this is Generation 1 because it gets wild. Pokemon gets so wild after Generation 1.
We're only on number 3 and it has gotten wild already.
Yeah, and I'm just telling you what we know about them from the Generation 1 canon.
Okay.
But I think when I can throw in a couple things about future generations because they're just so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
On future generations, there is a Mega Venusaur evolution, which has another flower on its head.
Oh, two flowers.
Uh-huh. And Margaret,
mm-hmm.
there is Gigantamax Venusaurs.
Gigantamax?
Gigantamax, spelled how you think, Venusaurs, which have a flower that is so large that it covers its entire body like an ornamental bowl cut.
That's adorable.
It is until I share these next things, and then it will haunt your dreams.
Oh, no. Sorry, what's its name again?
Gigantamax Venusaur.
Okay.
So Mega Venusaur, you imagine bigger.
Mm-hmm.
How much bigger? How tall is regular Venusaur?
6 feet, 7 inches.
Exactly. Could play like forward for the New York Knicks.
Sure.
Mega Venusaur would be the tallest basketball player ever, I think, at 7 foot, 10 inches.
Yeah. I don't think there's anyone taller
than Yao Ming was like 7'4", but it's
10. Okay.
7'10". Big boy.
Yeah.
Gigantamax, take a shot at it.
13 feet tall.
78 feet tall and 9 inches.
That is such a leap. That is such
Margaret stepped back from her microphone. She was scared.
That is to go from, oh my gosh. What is the tallest Pokemon?
Maybe that. I don't know. I haven't looked at their heights yet.
How could that be beatable? Okay.
This is other generation, so I didn't know about Gigantamax Venus. So just let that haunt your dreams. So you can mock its bowl cut.
Eat
you.
I wouldn't
drink it. I don't think it would eat you. It's like blue whales and you're a kelp to it.
Might be accidental.
So there you go.
Thank you.
All right. Let's get on to the research.
All right. And as you might remember, we have 20 minutes to research. And we are going to find living and non-living things and their traits that hopefully kind of resemble what this Pokemon can do in whatever way we interpret that individually. So we're going to go take our 20 minutes and we'll be right back with you with our findings.
See you in a bit.
Well, welcome back. We took our 20 minutes to research Camden. We're going to spin the random name generator to decide who goes first. First of all, was your research fruitful, would you say?
I would say it was plantful.
All right. All right, here goes. Who goes first?
Round and round she goes.
It's Camden.
Cammy.
All right, go ahead.
All righty. So I took something from the Pokédex and ran with it.
Okay.
The Pokédex says...
Can you review what a Pokédex is?
The Pokédex is the, like, field guide for the Pokémon universe.
Okay.
So it knows every Pokémon and has a little thing about them. But it is odd that it'd be like having a field guide, like, if you were going to go out into a forest.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, let's say you're going to see 20 different species of trees.
Okay.
It only reveals it. It only tells you about it once you find it. Well, which is not really how a field guide works.
Right.
It'd be like you just ran across a cedar tree and it's like, hey, there's a cedar tree. I wasn't going to tell you about it until you just saw it. So, but the cedar tree.
Great.
So anyway.
What did the Pokédex tell you today?
Well, so it said that Venusaur will stay on the move to seek sunlight. Remember that?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to talk about moving towards sunlight.
Okay. So I think, just not to give anything away about mine, but I think we both really focused on the plant aspect of Venusaur today.
Yeah. It's like a frog lizard boy.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, I'm sure we'll have plenty of chances to talk about the fun world of frogs and animals and all that. But I want to talk about moving towards sunlight. So I looked into tropism, which tropism means turning. And turning towards light is the type of tropism that I'm going to focus on. There's actually other types of tropism, like gravitropism, which is turning or moving in a way towards or away from gravity.
Oh.
So in biology, we call these things positive or negative tropisms based on whether they're doing it towards the thing or away from it. There are a lot of organisms, like in the gravitropism, that respond to how gravity is affecting them. But we're going to talk about two types, heliotropism and phototropism, which are different.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they're different.
So heliotropism is, you can guess, has to do with the sun. Has seasonal or daily movements towards the sun, while phototropism is movement towards light. And I'll get at the distinction between those. So let's talk about heliotropism. So some plants turn their body, turn themselves towards the sun throughout the day. Margaret, can you think
Sunflower.
Great. Yep, you earn your Kansas card. The sunflower turns towards the sun. So if you actually watch, and there's plenty of videos online. If you Google time-lapse sunflower throughout the day, you'll see that it faces towards the sun. They face east in the morning and towards gradually west, more westerly as the sun moves across the sky during the day. Daisies also do this. A lot of plants do this.
It makes sense.
Yeah. So that's heliotropism. And so that happens throughout the day. And like I said, it's also seasonal. And so I'll get at that in just a bit. But then there's phototropism, which can be both towards natural and artificial light.
So it can be either the sun or something, another light source.
Yes. And so anybody who has grown plants in the house, like from seeds, have you ever noticed this happening, that your plants will not grow directly straight up and down? They grow at a certain angle towards
the light.
Usually towards the light. Yeah. And what's kind of cool about plants is that also the color of light can affect how they grow. And so
I know that.
Yeah. Different growth patterns can be seen by changing the color of light, because plants have evolved to react to different colors of light in the sky, because that tells them it's a different time of year.
That's wild.
So they will only flower under certain colors. And a lot of people who have grown plants in the house might know this. That's because the color of the light they receive throughout the year is not always the same. Now, we think, well, it's just light outside. But the color is slightly different based off the time of year it is, which is really cool. And that's how plants sort of, you know, have their internal clock. They have their own rhythm, like a circadian rhythm.
Right.
going on inside them, the same that we know what time it is, night and day, so do plants, which is really cool. So you might be wondering, how do they do this? Margaret?
How do they do this?
See, you might have been wondering it.
I was.
And you were.
Please tell me.
There are two ways. One is a reversible way of doing things, of moving, and then there's an irreversible way. So the reversible way is through pressure. So blue light from the sun will cause some of the cells in a plant to absorb potassium, which leads to them to swell with water. So basically, the sun is going to cause some parts of the plant to swell with water, and that causes them to bend towards the sunlight.
I think that really highlights the anthropomorphism I was giving to these, you know, plants that turn towards the sun. I hadn't thought about the mechanism that would allow that to happen at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool because you just think, well, they need the light.
Mm-hmm.
But how they do that, just how they, like, they could have evolved, and they have a lot of ways to do this. But the reversible one, and I say it's reversible, is because if they swell with water, they can also lose water. Mm-hmm. And so as the sun moves throughout the sky, like for a sunflower, those cells will lose some of that water, mm-hmm. and they won't bend towards that light anymore. And other cells that are facing more towards the sun will start to bend again.
Mm-hmm.
And then at night, obviously, they relax. They're not pointed towards the sun, which is just really cool. So this can happen over and over again. But then there's a irreversible form where they grow towards sunlight.
Oh, and they can't turn at all. They just grow that way.
So they have growth hormones inside them. And this is probably what we're more familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a plant that is facing in one direction,
mm-hmm.
you could usually, when we think of this, like if you move the light,
mm-hmm.
they will grow in a different direction, but they may not necessarily just turn their whole, like their
orientation
mm-hmm. towards the light.
Mm-hmm.
They might have to start growing in a new direction. So you can, people have done this. They've mm-hmm. Put lights on slow timers and like slow moving timers, and they will actually get plants to create these like cool spiraled stems. But that's growth,
mm-hmm.
and that's because there are growth hormones on one side of the plant that cause it to grow in a certain direction in response to where the light is.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, you might be thinking, great, plants need to move towards light. They can do it by growing or turning towards the light. Cool.
Right.
Well, not all plants actually want to be facing the sun.
Yeah. I assume it's much like... you know, some plants want partial light, some want low light, some want full sun. Some plants would not survive if they were facing the sun constantly.
Yeah. Why wouldn't they survive?
Because I think it has a lot to do with heat.
Yep. What's the number one enemy of a plant is what? What would the heat cause them to do?
Dehydrate.
Dehydrate. Mm-hmm. They need water. A number one, if you are a plant, you need water. Number one, you want water.
Mm-hmm.
So you also need the light, but the light with the light also comes heat.
Right.
And losing water. And so what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, and once they have water, then they can ascend up the Maslow's hierarchy of needs and reach self-actualization eventually.
Yeah, they cannot.
But not without water.
They cannot self-actualize if mm-mm. they don't have water. Mm-mm. Fair, great point.
Thank you.
So my favorite prairie plant, the compass plant, points north,
mm-hmm.
which is why it's called the compass plant. But it does that to avoid the direct hottest time of day, which is when it's facing like north-south. If you look at it, then it does not have has a very thin shadow.
Right.
Which is great because then it avoids drying out and losing water.
Versus if it faced east and west.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It would, become very hot. The morning glory family of plants also does this, but this is an example of heliotropism. They point seasonally in a way. So in the summer, they're part of the plant in the center of the flower that has the eggs doesn't face the sun so that their eggs aren't damaged.
Smart. Not smart. There is no thought behind that, but cool.
I mean, evolution is amazing that they only do that certain seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And to avoid the hottest seasons. And sometimes they just don't want to be pointing towards the sun at all, which seems odd for a plant. So An example of this are jungle vines.
Oh.
Don't grow towards the light. In fact, they respond negatively. This is an example of negative phototropism.
Mm-hmm.
When there's light around, they don't grow towards it. Why might they do that?
When there's light around, they don't grow towards
it. It's interesting.
Well, I mean, I assume...
I'm going to give you a hint.
Yeah, give me
about
a hint.
The vine.
Uh-huh.
What do vines do?
They grow around other things.
Yes. And so if you're in the jungle
mm-hmm.
and you find a patch of light, mm-hmm. what does that mean?
That means that there's nothing growing there.
Yes.
Oh.
So keep going for
so
everyone.
There wouldn't be anything to hold on to.
Right. So moving away from the light means you are moving.
You're being blocked by other probably trees and plants.
Yep. It wants to find a tree. Essentially, mm-hmm. it's sort of the, it can't see trees.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it can see light
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's light, it means there's no tree. I don't want to go towards that thing.
Right. Okay, cool.
So that's really cool. And then to end this.
Yeah. What does this all have to do with Bulbasaur?
So,
Kevin?
Well, Venusaur.
Venusaur. I'm so sorry.
I mean, I guess all the three stages, they move towards the light. Because the plant needs to.
Uh-huh.
And I guess the legs.
Really, you're really
well,
puzzling
so it's just,
this out.
I don't, the whole, I guess the animal is in some sort of weird service to its plant
mm-hmm.
part of it.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like, I think we talked about centaurs last time.
Yes, yeah.
And like. Is the horse legs in service to the human needs?
Torso, yeah.
Which I guess in a weird sense, isn't our body just in service to our brain?
Wow.
What do you always say? Our body is just shuffle.
Carl, I like to say, and I don't think it's original to me, but that my body is just a little transportation vehicle walking my brain from room to room. I think that's John Mulaney. I think it is.
Anyway, so.
So a Bulbasaur or a Venusaur's body is just walking its plant from room to room.
So in a sense, thinking about this for animals doesn't make as much sense because most animals can detect light, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have eyes or have some way to receive light.
Mm-hmm.
And so they behave around light, but they're not necessarily growing towards light. Now there are examples like fungus or algae, which aren't technically plants,
right?
That do this, but there are animals that do react towards light. And since tropism means turning, they can. Phototropism is maybe not the way you would describe it, but it's not incorrect either. So, for example. Margaret, we're walking along a creek. There's a rock and I turn it over. Mm-hmm. What might you see?
You might see a bunch of different insects, mm-hmm. maybe some worms, mud.
Yep. Depending on the region you are in, you might see a sow bug or a pill bug
mm-hmm.
or a roly poly.
Mm-hmm.
Those little guys don't like to be in the light.
Nope.
They dry out. And so they, I guess you could say, exhibit negative phototropism too.
Mm-hmm.
They run away from the light.
Like a cockroach.
Uh-huh. Like a cockroach does the same thing. And so, you know, you could call it that. Bulbasaur, I guess, exhibits some positive phototropism. As far as I understand, they don't have heliotropism. It doesn't seem like they slowly throughout the day turn.
But then the other thing is, if they're stuck in a Pokeball all day until they're needed, there's not a lot of light in there, I wouldn't think.
Is a I need to do more research. I'm not sure if a Pokeball is kind of like a Harry Potter kind of thing.
Like there's another little world in there for them to hang out in.
When I was little, I always thought they were cramped. But
yeah, that's what it seems like to me.
But maybe it's like, a full room with light.
I hate to say it, Camden.
Yeah.
I don't think Pokemon's that realistic.
What did you research?
My turn. So Kim and I, like I said, both focused on the plant or flower aspect of Venusaur. And one of the things I noticed is that the flower on the different iterations, different stages of Bulbasaur, Ivysaur, Venusaur, are at different stages of blooming. Did you notice that?
Yes, I did notice that. That is a good point.
Bulbasaur's flower is completely closed up. Ivysaur's flower is kind of beginning to open up, and then Venusaur's is completely open. So I was thinking about that flower. What does it remind me of? Well, it reminds me of a corpse flower. And I'm not just saying that because I am interested in, you know, cemeteries and things, but it really does remind me of a corpse flower. And according to Live Science, there are a couple different plant species called the corpse flower, but I am referring to a species called Rafflesia tuonmude. You might be thinking of the kind of tall corpse flower that got a lot of attention in the New York Botanical Garden because it only blooms, you know, really, really rarely. We'll talk about that later. But this one is more like the one on Venusaur's back. It has red, orangey petals and then white spots on those petals, and it's also really big. It's about as large as this fictional flower, too, if we remember that Venusaur is supposed to be how tall? I forget.
6'7".
6'7", yeah. So the corpse flower's petals can be up to almost 4 feet wide, which makes it one of the largest flowers in the world, if not the largest. Yeah, 4 feet wide. It's huge.
So that's kind of, the Pokemon is kind of accurate there.
Kind of accurate.
And that it literally looks like it.
It looks exactly like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I learned that corpse flowers of this species, the one that it looks like Venusaur is toting around, can be found in Borneo.
Oh.
Did you know that? I wish we had seen them when we were there.
Wait.
What?
The on our refrigerator is a picture, or is this a magnet.
Oh, hold on. Let me go get it. Hold on. Keep talking.
So as a background, Margaret and I went to Borneo for a science excursion, I guess, several years ago. Stayed and saw orangutans, stayed with a wonderful host family and at a research facility, and we brought back memorabilia, and Margaret now is holding it from her refrigerator.
It is a corpse flower.
So can you...
Yeah, so on this magnet, which is the shape of Borneo, there's Mount Kinabatu, and then there's a corpse flower. It's exactly the same. It's got that kind of round middle and then the spotted red petals. Amazing. Great memory.
Venusaur was on our fridge.
I'll post a picture of it. Yes, in a sense. Nice job. Wow. I'm very excited about this. I hope you all are too, listeners. But they can be found in Borneo, according to the Plants of the World Online, which is this really cool project launched by the Royal Botanic Gardens. And I learned, and it's interesting you mentioned vines, Camden, because this corpse flower is a parasitic plant that grows on a specific type of grapevine.
Oh.
Yeah.
I kind of thought it was its own thing.
Yeah. So I don't believe that Venusaur is always attached to that specific species of grapevine, but this corpse flower on their back is kind of parasitic looking. You know what I mean?
Oh, man, this is even darker.
Yeah, it's...
So not only do we think that Venusaur... Well, the whole thing is Venusaur, I think.
Yeah.
But this little frog lizard boy dinosaur thing is being parasited?
Mm-hmm. Could be.
Oh.
Yeah, could be.
It controls it?
But it could be kind of a... No, I don't know. Who knows? Who can know? But... In the wild, in real life, the corpse flower, this species, grows on a grapevine.
Imagine how powerful he'd be without that on his back.
I know, without that corpse flower holding him back. But this takes about 9 months of growth before the corpse flower blooms on that vine.
Okay.
And this type of flower is usually in bloom for about a week out of the year. So Venusaur would rarely be carrying around a blooming flower. Yeah. Other species of corpse flowers bloom for even shorter periods of time, like the Amorphophallus titanium,
sure,
which blooms for just a day, just 24 to 36 hours, I think.
Wow.
And did you think that you heard the word phallus in that scientific name? You could say it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. Because that species of corpse flower's name means, according to Wikipedia, misshapen giant phallus. So that's just a little fun.
That's rough. Fun thing. Well, the creator of Pokemon didn't either.
But that's not
was
this species. That's I know. Not this
I'm
species.
Just saying, was either knew about that and was like, not doing that one. Not on a kid's show. or they really lucked out.
Mm-hmm. Just happened into it. So, why is it called a corpse flower? Well, according to the New York Botanical Garden, it is because the blooming flower smells like death. Specifically, it gives off a strong, strong smell of rotting meat.
Yum.
Why would a flower have evolved to smell so bad, Camden?
To keep the Pokemon at bay.
Nope. No, no. In real life.
I thought it was to attract. Was it Paris? Because I was thinking, I don't know. It does.
I think. Don't think too
to
hard
about it. To attract
insects. Yes, exactly. Specifically to attract pollinators that are generally drawn to the smell of decomposition, like flies and beetles and other things, and so that they will pollinate other corpse flowers.
Cool.
And that is according to the NC State College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. It's just interesting because, you know, every organism, including plants, they have evolved to reproduce in really particular ways, and some flowers have evolved to smell nice and look really pretty, and the corpse flower took a different path.
Yeah, so Venusaur smelled bad?
We'll get into it. So the moral of the story is, I guess we're getting into it now, is
how
that
much more is there?
For the 1 week a year that Venusaur isn't toting around just a bunch of ferns and a closed up flower, they are toting around a bunch of ferns and a massive flower that smells like, according to one person that was interviewed by the Miami Herald, a wet, poop-filled diaper. So I would not want to be around this Pokemon, much less get close enough to battle them. And
Venusaur, I choose... No.
No.
Everyone screams, no, you do
disgusting.
Not. I give up. You win
no.
this tournament.
No, no, no,
you
no, no.
nasty man. Keep that thing in its Pokeball.
Wait until next week. Fight them next week. Also, during my 20 minutes of research, I happened to stumble upon an artist's interpretation of how Venusaur would look in real life. And it's well done, but it is rough looking.
I'm sure the Pokemon fan art world is...
wild.
Yeah.
But I like it because it shows Venusaur next to a person to kind of see the size. It's like when you would look at dinosaur books and they would show, you know, the T-Rex next to a person and you'd be like, oh, okay, that's how big they were. Anyway, if you want to visit it, go to tinyurl.com/yikesmon.
I know it's yikes because you showed it to me in the middle of the research.
It's yikes.
Oh, it's not, you feel safe. It's certainly safe for work. Everyone
definitely.
Can open it,
but
it's
just very... realistic looking, and you realize, okay, yeah, this would be pretty terrifying to see in real life. So that was my research. Corpse flower. Venusaur smells like one week a year smells like a diaper filled with rotting flesh.
All right. So we are reaching towards the end, so we have to rate this Pokemon.
Let's do it.
0 to 5 Pokeballs of how real it is. And we say real because I think we can take that in any direction we choose. Venusaur, Margaret, what are you going to give it?
I honestly don't remember my other ratings for this.
I think
these
that's
stages,
good.
Which is probably good. Okay, so what I'm taking into consideration, really, it's the plant on the back thing that I don't understand that relationship at all. I have yet to find an example of that kind of relationship that isn't. No, it's. I'm gonna go with a 2.
A 2.
Yeah, it's just not real. It's not realistic.
There are
realistic elements to it, but
I would say it's more realistic than Bulbasaur in that Bulbasaur was just a big old bulb.
Yeah,
and it made no sense that it needed light.
That is a good point.
And Venusaur...
2.5 then. 2.5.
Yeah, Venusaur at least looks exactly like a thing. But as far as I understand in the canon, no one's like, God, get this Venusaur out of here. It smells like poop. So that's not accurate. The poor lizard part of it is slowly being sapped of its energy.
Well, we don't know that.
If this, look, this whole podcast is based on the fact if it were, so we don't think that's true. We don't understand how it's getting its energy if it's not through grapes or the grape leaf.
I just realized something.
What?
Like, where are the roots of the plant? Oh, sorry. Oh, I just got chills. Sorry.
I'm sure there's fan art of that. Two and a half feels good. 2.5 Pokeballs. We got to say 5 for, I don't know.
Something.
Like a, well, I can't say.
Didn't you say there's a Pokemon like a that looks like a person? It's just a person?
Margaret, we're only on episode 3. There's 151 of these. I can't tell you all of it.
Okay. So we both are at 2.5 for Venusaur. Well, we're interested to see what you think about Venusaur. Let us know by emailing us if you want to about, you know, what do you think? Are we off base? Is it more realistic than that? Let us know. But you can support our show and other shows like Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions by supporting us on Patreon.
Remember to go to patreon.com/don'tpeeonyourleg to support us and earn access to all of our bonus content.
Because Gotta Catch 'em All, or Gotta Classify 'em All, really, is... Is produced every other week, with public episodes like this one being published once a month on our Apple, Spotify, Google podcast platforms. You'll get those odd-numbered episodes. But to get the even-numbered episodes, you'll want to become a fan of the show on Patreon to gain access to that bonus content.
Remember, again, find that bonus content at patreon.com/don'tpeeonyourleg.
And if you want more content, you can follow us on our social media pages on Instagram at Don't Pee on Your Leg.
Twitter at Don't Pee on Your Leg, just the letter P.
And then at facebook.com/don'tpeeonyourleg.
Gotta Classify 'em All is a podcast produced by Two Birds, One Scone. Articles, blog posts, and more about what you can do every day to conserve our environment can be found at twobirdsonescone.org.
Original music by Riley Taylor and Camillo.
And if you have any questions or comments or want to suggest anything for future episodes or tell us how disturbing some of the real life implications of these Pokemon are, please email us at gottaclassify@gmail.com.
Have a great week.